Swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone! Passes does it again.
Again.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over!
The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
Hey, welcome back to Play Testy. It is episode 162. This is the official Red Sox podcast at WEEI. Remember, before we get going, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening. Five-star rating, always appreciated. On YouTube, find us on the WEEI channel. You got a Play Testy playlist there. Find all of our episodes, hit the thumbs up, subscribe to WEEI. Find us on the socials at Play Testy on both Twitter and Instagram. Here with Sammy, here with Pat, and we're going on, what, like a week since anything significant happened? I mean, we're flying high with the Crochet deal, but yeah, we're pretty much just like waiting for deals, man. Just waiting for deals because it feels like the Sox heads are like in every corner, but they haven't closed anything. And like the Yankees have definitely done stuff like Max Fried, Devin Williams, and most recently Cody Bellinger. So other teams are getting better. The Orioles got that Japanese guy. What's his name? Sugano? Do I have that right? Sugano?
Tomoyuki Sugano.
Sugano. And he's like, obviously he's 35 and like, we'll see what he is. But, you know, multi-time Japanese Cy Young winner. Like, they're doing things. Like, the Jays are trying to do things. Sox are trying to do things too. But we want it now. And I have a sheet of things that we could talk about. And there are so many freaking names on it. Because they've been reported as interested in so many different people. And it doesn't feel like they're being extra tied to any particular guy over the other. So it's kind of hard to figure out like how much time we should dedicate to each. So we're probably just going to cover it all. But yeah, I mean, do I have that right? How are you guys doing? Like, is that a good synopsis?
I'm good, Gordo. Thank you for asking. I think, yeah, you got it right. The part that makes it confusing is third base. First base and third base. We keep hearing Casas smoke. Maybe they'll move Devers to first. Maybe they'll move him to DH. Maybe Bregman takes over. Maybe they trade for Arenado. There's so many moving parts going on. It's hard to identify which target is the Red Sox main target right now. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you. I am bored. I love the Garrett Crochet trade. I could talk about that all day long. But it's been like a week. I need some more juice.
Is that how we want to go about this? Because like I feel like the way we could go about it is there's the starting pitching market, then there's the offense market, which with the Red Sox, because of their versatility, it's all tied together, whether they get an outfield bat, an infield bat, both. It's kind of all tied together. And then there's the bullpen market, which we haven't really heard that much about. It feels really slow developing. We've heard a couple of tea leaves, but we could start with the offense if you want.
Yeah, why not? I mean, there's the glaring need for a right-handed bat, so that already, you know, brings a few names to mind. I think we start there.
Okay, let's start. I'll ask you guys a question then. If you could only pick one, and I think there's an argument to be made that if you ship the right guys out, that it would be smart to add multiple, but let's start with one. You can pick one bat, and I'll give you guys the options here. Teoscar Hernandez, Anthony Santander, Alex Bregman, Nolan Arenado. I'll leave it at that. There's a couple of outside the box trade targets or like maybe even free agent, like first base types that could DH that like you could talk about. But let's leave it to those four. If you could have one and pick the one you would have, defend it. If it's an infielder, tell me what position you'd play him at. Feel free to give a caveat. Like if this is your first choice, but if this, whatever, just Sammy, I'll have you go first. Who are you picking?
I want Teoscar. I think it's really simple. You put him in that corner outfield DH role. He's a veteran, good vibes guy from everything we've heard. It seems like everybody who's met Teoscar loves Teoscar. We haven't even met him, and we like him just from what we've seen on social media. And he fits. He fits a need. Right-handed power bat, you slot him. Probably three-hole. You got Devers second, Casas cleanup, Teoscar between those two. That's pretty much it, man. It's simple. Yes, they probably should have signed him last year ahead of the 2024 season. Seemed like that was a good fit. No, they already had O'Neill on the books, but still, I think that Teoscar would have, you know, slotted in nicely with that team. They still struggled with left-handed pitching. Stop me if you've heard that one before. So I think they amend what they missed out on in 2024, and they get Teoscar for 2025. And yes, you lose the draft pick. That sucks, but you can't change that. So just do it, Sox.
Pat, were you going to pick Teoscar?
Yes,
if
and
you
no.
were, I'll ask you. Okay, well, okay, yes then no. for yes, and Sammy, I want you to follow up with this, because this is kind of the discussion I want to have re-Teoscar, is if they sign Teoscar, what is his role? Because is he obviously, like, defensive metrics aren't that great, and he's been a better right fielder than left fielder, but with Fenway Park, he's definitely not playing that right field, so he would be the left fielder, you would think. Is he playing left field? Is he DHing and you're asking for a Yoshida trade as well? Like, where if the Red Sox sign Teoscar, Pat, what do you want the role to be defensively?
I mean, he has to play left field. I don't think I want him at DH just yet, especially where he's by far a better fielder than Masataka Yoshida, which isn't saying much, but he is a better fielder than Yoshida. I believe his range and his outs above average are insanely ass, but his arm is actually pretty decent. If he's throwing from 312 feet, that's really not that bad. And the monster is so beyond friendly to left fielders if you know how to play it right. Yeah, there's no shot in hell he's playing right field. But yeah, for me, I would want him in left field. I really like having the versatility that DH spot open, especially knowing that he's going to command a multi-year deal. And I feel like if you put him in that DH spot right now, he's really locked in that spot for the duration of that contract. I would much rather prefer him in left field while he can still field left field.
Tell me what you think of this, because I agree with you, Pat. So for so much of this offseason, I had my head set on if they get Teoscar or Santander, they go to DH, and if they get an Arenado or a Bregman, then that with Arenado, at least he goes to third, Devers goes to DH. But I've sort of started to accept the fact that a Yoshida trade probably isn't going to happen, and they might just be better off hoping that he bounces back this year and seeing what happens. So the alignment in my eyes would be, you've got the Yoshida, Ref Snyder platoon DH, you've got Teoscar in left, you've got Duran in center, and you start the season with Sedan in right. And when Roman Anthony is ready, he can take over that job, and Sedan can move to a sort of a utility role. By that point in time, maybe Duran is hurt, maybe Story is hurt, you need the shortstop. Maybe Roman isn't ready and Rafael plays more right field. Like, I think that actually it would be pretty smooth, while also allowing you the flexibility to, if Yoshida has a better year and is then expendable, and even if he doesn't, 2 years is more expendable, it keeps that DH spot flexible for the following year. Sammy, what do you think of that? Because I know that involves Devers at third, which I know you haven't always been the biggest proponent of.
No, I'm fine with Devers at third. It's not my preference, but I don't think it's a huge deal. My issue with that is Yoshida still in the mix. I think if you get Teoscar Hernandez against left-handed pitchers, this is just against lefties, I think he's going to be in left field. I think you're going to see Duran in center, and I think you're going to see Sedan in right, especially at home games, because then you have Sedan covering right field. Alternatively, maybe they throw Willier in there against a few lefties.
What about against righties, though? Curious. Where's your head go against righties?
So that's why it's tricky. I'm keeping Teoscar in there at DH against righties. Duran in left, Sedan in center, Willier in right. I do not think Yoshida is A, good enough to be a platoon bench DH guy, and two, I don't think he does enough to, like, warrant a bench spot when
this is where we cut off. I assumed that Willier was traded. So you're right. If Willier's in there, that changes my whole, like,
If
he signed Teoscar, someone has to go.
Like, let's say Willier's traded for a pitcher. We don't even need a name. Then I'm much more open to keeping Yoshida around. I think that opens up a ton of playing time for him. Probably move him around the deadline, or maybe the end of the season. I don't think he's going to last more than one more season in Boston. Not because of the skill. He can hit, but that's all he does. I think he's going to get pushed out of the lineup if they sign another bat like Teoscar, and then Roman Anthony comes up. There's just no room for him. So, that was a long-winded answer of saying he's the odd man out, I think, in this scenario.
Sammy, one thing that you said that I kind of, I guess, disagree with is against lefties, they're now able to put in Teoscar DH instead of, I mean, I guess what would be Yoshida, and then Ref Snyder and left. Those are two guys that mash lefties.
Yeah.
So in that circumstance, yes, Tio, absolutely, DH, Ref is a much better fielder than Teoscar at this point. But, like, they now have that versatility to have an outfield of Ref Snyder, Duran, Rafaela, or vice versa, Rafaela, Duran, Willie or Masa out. Like, they have guys who can hit lefties that can hit, you know, in the top five in the lineup. Haven't had that. Last year, it was Tyler O'Neill every single day, lefty or righty, did not matter. It was Tyler O'Neill. This year, yeah, you have that versatility. Against righties, you can throw Masa in there, Teo in the field, Ref in the field, Teo with DH for lefties. They can play around with it, which is
mm-hmm. great. That's a good point, Pat. I'm not going to lie. I totally forgot about Ref Snyder. Sorry, Rob Ref Snyder. We love you. But, yeah, I guess I would amend that. Against lefties, I'd maybe go Ref Snyder in right field, have Sedan be the utility guy that day, Duran in center. I'm not taking Duran out if a lefty's
there's not
in.
Enough room for everybody. That's the truth. No. If they're going to sign Teoscar, they do have to trade someone. And
right. And they're going to sign a right-handed bat. Someone's going to get pushed out of this equation. There's just too many cooks in the kitchen. And this is a good problem to have. People act like this is like, what are you going to do with XYZ if this happens? You figure it out after. Get your guy, reevaluate, do it again.
Is it the same for you guys? Because I really don't think my answer, like, I think the entire conversation that we just had for me is the same if they go Santander. I don't, like, I know he's not the lefty masher, but we have Teoscar in there every day. I'd have Santander, obviously, in there every day. Is there anything that you would change there? Because obviously it changes dramatically when we start talking about the Bregmans and the Arenado types. But with Santander or any outfielder, like, I think it probably looks the same.
Exactly the same. Just swap out Teoscar for Santander. I don't think it changes at all. The only thing that might change is he'll play once in a while at first base. Maybe there's a tough lefty and they want to get Casas. Like, if Casas is either doing really poorly and they want to get him hot again, or he's really hot and they don't want him to cool down because Tarek Skubal is pitching, then maybe you go Santander. But pretty much the exact same setup with Santander over Teo.
Gordo, so circling back to your original question, that, like, who would I want? One answer, yes, my answer is Teoscar Hernandez. In a vacuum, equal value across the board. Let's say these guys were all willing to sign a one-year, $1 million deal. I would go Bregman, then Santander, and then Teoscar. But when you put years to dollars, it is Teoscar.
Agreed with your point there, Pat.
Because Bregman fills so many holes that they have this year. They don't have a veteran leader. They don't have a guy who's been there, done that. If he truly is going to play second base, that is by far the biggest hole on this team. He's a right-handed bat. Like, he plugs all of that. Then you kind of stack that up against 6 years, 180, and you're like, no shot in hell. Am I comfortable with those fourth, fifth, 6 years of that contract? Santander, on the other hand, switch hitter, doesn't hit lefties as good as he hits righties, which kind of sucks because that's the biggest need, obviously. But he does not strike out a lot. He doesn't whiff. Like, his profile.
That's
actually
the key. That's the key right there. Is you can't. The issue with the bats on the market beyond Juan Soto is you're not. And one thing that I've come to accept here is that you're not going to solve the offense. You're not going to make this a top 3 to 5 offense in baseball in one offseason. Soto obviously could have taken you a step there, but you could target Teoscar and he makes you a hell of a lot better against lefties, gives you a lot of pop, or you could target Santander, also gives you a lot of pop, isn't going to make you any better. In fact, you're going to get probably worse against lefties because you've lost Tyler O'Neill, but he's going to help that strikeout problem. He doesn't strike out anywhere close to the amount that O'Neill does. It would actually make a difference in that regard, but it's an either or thing. Like, you're not going to solve both problems. And that's why I've kind of gotten myself to accept the fact that it probably would be trying to solve too much, getting multiple guys in there. I don't know. Maybe if you did Arenado as one of them to improve the defense, and then you got a different, and like got like a Teoscar or Santander as the second bat. Because obviously, if you get Arenado, that can't be the only bad addition. His OPS was just over 700 last year. That's just not going to be a good enough offense. But I just it's hard to make it fit long term if you're taking on 3 years of Arenado and 3 to 5 years of Teoscar or Santander. So to get the perfect fix, to me, it happens next year, and the goal this year has to be, let's put a great rotation on the field. Let's get better defensively if we're fully healthy, and let's hope that the offense can be just a little bit more consistent. Because overall, talent-wise last year, if you look at the overall numbers, it wasn't bad. It was just the inconsistencies. They were up, and then they were down. Just if you could level it out just a little bit. And even though Teoscar has a lot of swing and miss, I do feel a little bit better in terms of streaky. Like, no one's streakier than O'Neill. We watched that. We saw that last year. He was great, but he was streaky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what happens when you have a million strikeouts in your lineup. Like, you go last year, 1 through 9, Duran, great ball player, strikes out a lot. Devers, medium. O'Neill, the most strikeouts on the team. Casas, great OBP guy, great power. He still strikes out a lot. Trevor Story strikes out a lot. Everybody in that lineup, other than Yoshida, who we're saying is the odd man out.
That's the issue right there. So, we talk about trading Yoshida, and it's like he was literally the only player on the team last year that struck out at an above, that was above average in strikeout rate. I think Danny Jansen might have been barely above average. I don't think that one counts. So it's literally like that might be another reason why maybe you don't trade Yoshida. If it was in an Arenado deal, he doesn't strike out much, so that would make it a little bit more palatable.
Bregman,
yeah,
Bregman's appealing. Bregman's appealing for that reason. I mean, he does really three things. He's got a little bit of pop. I wouldn't call him a power guy, but he can pop 20 plus home runs. Doesn't strike out, and then if Devers is okay with it, everyone's all right with it, he can play third base. So he helps you two different areas. But 31 years old on opening day, gonna cost a lot of money. That is the big, big, big caveat to Alex Bregman.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too is that this is kind of the beauty of the trade deadline, because maybe there's not guys that can fix all your problems right this second, but if you get a Teoscar and the strikeout things are still an issue, like a big issue, you can very easily at the trade deadline find a middle of the order bat or even lower end of the order bat who could hit for contact and not whiff. I mean, look what the LA just did with Tommy Edman. Like, he was a guy that went for like nothing, but he profiled really well, puts the ball in play, is good on defense. You can always find those guys. Teoscar sets you up for that, like, one small addition makes us a lot better. Where if you kind of maybe go Bregman and you're not hitting for power at all, then you get into this weird spot where you're kind of overpaying for maybe a rental power hitter, which we kind of saw with Schwarber. Not the overpay part, but the addition of the power. I think if you had Teo right now, you're still a very, very good lineup. But if the strikeouts are a problem, that is a very easy fix with a guy like Tommy Edman last year or someone who just profiles in that mold.
Well, it's also about the defense too, like the alignment. If you add, let's say they add Arenado. You now have Arenado, like, he's not playing first base. Throw that out the window. It's not happening. If they get Arenado, he's playing third, and either Devers is at first or at DH. So basically the only scenarios if you get Arenado are you trade Tristan Casas now, which means you're getting way worse offensively overall, or you're putting Devers at DH, which to your point about the trade deadline, Pat, means that if they're going to make a move at the deadline, it's either going to have to be for an outfielder or a second baseman, and obviously that all depends on, like, is Christian Campbell good right away? Is Roman Anthony good right away? Did they keep William Bray? Like, all these questions. But if you leave DH as the Yoshida Ref Snyder platoon, you leave room for Yoshida to break back out, because obviously he was playing hurt last year, but we don't know if that was just like an excuse or if actually that was like having a significant impact on his performance. Because I remember we heard he was playing hurt down the stretch the year before. So now that's now a year and a half worth of injury excuses we've heard for this guy. So if he doesn't perform, you can get anyone in the league to fill that spot. You can get an outfielder and play him in the outfielder and put Teoscar in that spot. You could get an infielder and play any of your infield, do the rotation, get guys days off at DH. There's a lot of options if you fill a legitimate position right now and leave DH to be your most kind of influx position. And then, of course, I'll always put it out there. If DH is open next year and Vlad's open to it, come to Papa.
Oh, yeah. Dude, you know what? Not to take us off topic. I actually think they're going to get Vlad. I've totally talked myself into, like, not I want him, but I actually think it's going to happen. So we'll get into that, I'm sure, at some point down the line. But
every episode's going to have a little bit of Vlad in it from here on.
A little sprinkle of Vlad. Dude, that's kind of like I kept sprinkling in Crochet at the end of last year. We're just going to keep sprinkling in guys who we think might come to the Red Sox.
I'm at the point right now where, aside from like Corbin Burnes, the second move that I want to see the absolute most is Pete Alonso back to the Mets, just because it takes him out of Vlad.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my God. And then with the Yankees, I know Vlad hates them, but money talks. If the Yankees, I keep seeing these Paul Goldschmidt things on Twitter. If they sign Goldschmidt or Carlos Santana or one of these one-year guys and first base is like very much open for them a year from now, consider me scared shitless.
No. Nah. Nah. He's picking the Sox. Come on. They're not going to lose.
If they give him a good offer. If they give him a good offer, he would definitely pick the Sox over the Yankees. That's for sure.
I think they will. I mean, the reason I'm confident is because, one, the teams that we just talked about, I don't think the Dodgers will be in. Mets, if they sign Alonso, I feel like they're out. Who else? Texas has a lot of money. Maybe them. I don't think the Blue Jays are going to get him back. Doesn't seem like he's super interested. Yankees, maybe Bellinger plays first. I don't know if the Giants.
Who do they?
Giants, Lamont Wade. He's pretty solid. They have a platoon, actually.
I thought they were going to trade him.
Wade and Flores. Dude.
Oh, that's terrible. Yeah. Okay, but no one wants to go to the Giants, though, so that helps. Like, no power hitters want to go to the Giants. No,
pitchers do, but hitters.
Yeah, pitchers do.
Pitchers ballpark, a guy on a Hall of Fame trajectory. There's no
You want to hit it freezing cold. It's freezing cold at that ballpark in San Francisco. And
well, the ballpark's beautiful, windy, but it's brutal.
Gorgeous, yeah. But it's cold, and it is windy as hell, and the fences are very far back. Or come to cushy Fenway Park where you can reach out and touch left field, Vlad.
You guys saw that highlight video I made. He's a visiting player and he's 25 years old and he's hit like 15 balls like across the fucking street. Like, it's crazy how many like moon bomb highlights I was able to find of him at Fenway Park. It's ridiculous.
Are you guys aware of the Giants 30 home run curse?
Yeah.
Was it since Bonds or something?
Dude, it's like, no, it's not that far back. It's since, it was like 2016, 15. No one has hit 30 home runs. And there was only one guy who was close. And I'm pretty sure it was Brandon Belt, like three.
No, it's Barry Bonds.
Ago. It was Barry.
That's wild.
Right. Am I crazy?
Hold on. Going there, dude. Get out of here.
Yeah, no. Don't do that. We were talking about the Giants today in our play Tessie chat about how the Giants won three World Series, but none of the guys in their lineup were like home run guys. Like Buster Posey hit 20-something, but nobody was like 30, 40 home runs, just death by 1,000 paper cuts. That's not Vlad. Come to Fenway. Anyway, enough Vlad. We'll get to him.
Yeah, we'll get Vlad. We'll get Vlad. Come to Papa. But let's get into some pitching stuff because I said we had all this stuff to get to and then we just spent 20 minutes on hitting, which obviously we love to talk about it. All right. Tell me if I'm forgetting anyone pitching-wise. Free agents, Corbin Burns, Jack Flaherty, Sean Manaea, Nick Pivetta, Walker Buehler, and then trade candidates Luis Castillo and then maybe Jared Jones. Anyone I'm forgetting there? By the way, I didn't say hitting options. My favorite's Teoscar as well for the reasons we talked
about. The big one that just came out was Patrick Sandoval. Not that it matters for this year.
Oh,
That's another name that was quoted out there.
Different though, because he's out for the year pretty much. So he would be a 2026 ad.
I think that's it. I guess Jesus Luzardo you could throw in there.
That's true. Jesus Luzardo out there has not been connected to the Red Sox this offseason.
No, thanks.
So let's just for the sake of discussion, assume that Corbin Burns is off the market. Actually, Sammy, pose your question from Twitter because I want to see. I think I know where your head's at. Post the question you asked on Twitter about Corbin and Vlad.
Well, okay. I'll come up with a new Nuff said. That was going to be my Nuff said, but this is a better. No, this is better. This is better. Okay. So, Pat, I don't know if you saw, but I posted, I think that was today, Tuesday as we record, asking people, do you think if the Red Sox signed Corbin Burns, regardless of the contract, it's going to be big, to a big contract, does that increase the odds they sign Vlad? Does it decrease the odds they sign Vlad? Or does it have no effect on Vlad at all?
There was a fourth option in there too, Sammy. What
the fourth option is Sammy is not old, which got a few votes. So
that's ridiculous. Who the fuck's voting for that? I think as much as I would love to see the Sox sign Corbin Burns, it definitely decreases the odds that they're signing Vlad. Two mega contracts like that, back to back off seasons, when they also definitely need to extend Garrett Crochet, like that's asking a lot from an owner that has not spent in a while. So
even when you saw
think it definitely
Soto,
decreases it.
Even after you saw the Soto offer?
So the Soto offer was 700 mil, but it's spread out over time and had some deferred money. Like Corbin Burns, you have to assume is getting, 30-ish a year? And then Vlad is going to get more than that a year. Now you're into the 60-ish range a year on two players plus Devers. And now you're going to have to add Crochet in there. Like that, I just don't think they're going to do it. That said, I would still love to see them sign Burns because, again, there's no guarantee Vlad even hits free agency. But
you can't not sign Burns because you're banking on Vlad. That's way too risky.
Or if you are, you better have some damn good intel that he's definitely hitting the market.
Yeah, or be willing to go way over what you're supposed to.
Pat, what about you? Do you think if they signed Corbin Burns, it would decrease the odds that they signed Vlad?
I don't think it would, because I think they kind of have two separate funds. I think one fund is more your Burnses, your Teoscars, your Bregmans, your big free agent, you know, 5, 6, 7 year deal. So have it, so be it, whatever. We've seen them go beyond their comfort zone, really, with these younger guys. They locked up Devers over $300 million. No one really saw that coming. They went to $300 million on Yamamoto. They went to $700 on Soto. Like, I think they know the true value in these young studs. Like, those are the guys that, sure, they get 10, 12, 14-year contracts. You get 8, 9 good seasons out of those deals. I think I don't think it hurts them at all. I think these young guys, when they reach the market, those are guys that they are willing to go beyond their comfort level with. And as infuriating as it is that they don't spend on every free agent that we want, those are the best investments. And I think that, sure, if you sign Burns, that's a huge chunk of money. You extend Crochet, huge chunk of money. Raffy's making good money. They're not stupid. They know a guy who's 26, 27, 28, hitting free agency this young, who can literally change your franchise. No, I don't think they cheap out on that. I don't think it changes their odds at all.
Well, that might be a reason why they aren't necessarily being as aggressive here with Burns. You saw the reports that if they signed Soto, it's not like they would have gone out and signed Fried as well. I forget who reported that. That might have been Sean McAdam. But like the plan, a good plan to me, assuming they're not willing to, like, obviously if they're willing to do both, I just have such a hard time envisioning it. I think the more likely plan would be sign like a shorter term guy now, and then next offseason you put your full court press on for Vlad. And if you don't get Vlad, there's a bunch of good pitchers next offseason. Like, if you don't get Burns now, like, you could get Cease next offseason. You get Framber Valdez next offseason. You get Zach Gallen next offseason. Mm-hmm. There's others.
So my answer to this question is I think it significantly decreases the odds of Vlad coming to the Red Sox. I was playing devil's advocate on you, Gordo. I agree with you. I think that if Corbin Burns was like 25 years old, like Garrett Crochet's age, and they extended him, then I'd be like, oh yeah. They want the core to all be around the same age. They all grow together, blah, 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 blah. But I can't let John Henry off the hook with the cheap allegations. I just can't do it. I know he had the big offer for Soto. I know they had a fairly juicy offer for Max Fried, and they've been in on other guys, but if you can't see the deal, I'm not going to give you credit. So I just can't envision a world where they sign Corbin Burns, period. I really can't envision a world where they sign Corbin Burns at 30 to a 6 to 8 year deal where he's making over $25 million a year, well over $25 million a year. And then they go out and they sign Vlad, which is going to be what, 450 to like between 450 and like 600 million. It's going to be another crazy contract. I just can't envision it. Granted, crazier things have happened. I hope I'm wrong. It just doesn't compute in my little squirrel brain.
So the reason I wanted to do this first before we talked about the other pitchers is because I want to like preface that conversation by saying I think a Corbin Burns deal with the Red Sox is really unlikely. The urgency with the Red Sox just isn't going to be the same now that they have a legitimate ace in the fold. And with Burns, if he's not going to get that $250 million contract from anyone, this is a guy who wants to be out west. If he's making concessions in a deal, the team that's going to get him is the Giants. It's either going to be the highest offer.
I could see the Angels. I could see the Angels doing one of those weird big offers, and Corbin Burns goes, Bakersfield is not that far from Anaheim.
No, if they do it, he would go there, I bet. You never know with them. They could. Artie Moreno can just, he's so unpredictable. Like,
they have a new focus on pitching too. They had that draft, I think that was 2 years ago, where they only drafted pitchers. Bizarre. So I could see it. I could see it. But I do think Giants. I agree with you, Gura. Yeah. That's my, if I'm betting, Giants.
It's like the reporting out there has been that the Angels aren't going after big money things anymore. But it's just, if there's one owner that's going to wake up and change his mind, it would be Artie Moreno with the Angels. But yeah, if it's going to be a deal, if it has to be a deal like the Bellinger, Montgomery type, Snell type deal, where it's like opt outs, if it came to that, it would be with the Giants, you'd have to think. But
yeah, great place to pitch too. The opposite of what we were just talking about. For everything that's rough about hitting in San Francisco, oof. And he's a cutter guy, throws a lot of cutters, Corbin Burns. So he's going to be getting that weak contact, little dinky fly balls, get knocked down by the wind. He might win the Cy Young if he pitches for the Giants.
I tell him, man, he almost wins the Cy Young every year. So for the rest of the guys, though, and for the sake of, if you want to make the argument, you can. Who out of, I'll read the names off again of the likely candidates. You got beyond Burns, it goes Jack Flaherty, Sean Manaea, Nick Pivetta, Walker Buehler, and then in trades, Luis Castillo, Jared Jones. Make your case for any one of these guys. I know that Sammy and I are going to have different ones here, so it's going to be good.
I think we're going to have, well, I have two. There's two guys I'm looking at. I have 1A and 1B. 1A for me, and this is the one you won't like, Gordo, is I really would love for the Red Sox to trade for Jared Jones. And I know it's going to cost a lot. It's going to be like Willier Abreu and Marcelo Meyer, like a major league piece and then a big prospect. And I get that. That turns a lot of people off. I get it. But Jared Jones, 22 years old, absolute fireballer, super bright future. That's a kid, if you get him in your rotation, you got him for 5 years, I believe, five more seasons on a rookie deal, costs you no money, doesn't lock you into any big money contract, and he's got the ceiling of an ace. The kid is a freak. He throws like triple digits from the right side, so you'd have Crochet from the left side throwing triple digits, Jones from the right side. They'd be growing together. They're both in their mid to early 20s. Just perfect. It put them in the Andrew Bailey pitching lab. I love that. To me, that's like not quite a prospect swap with Meyer, but you're just swapping out young guys. So that's my plan A, because it one, like I said, great pitcher.
Sammy,
two,
let's hold off on your plan B. I want to get Pat's response.
Another thing about Jones, the last thing, and then I'll be done. That doesn't affect Vlad whatsoever, because that's the true extension for Jones, you don't even need to touch that for like 2 years. And then even then, you got multiple years after that. So go ahead.
So my response to this, and I want to preface it by saying I love Jared Jones. I love watching him pitch. Had him on my fantasy team last year, and I watched so many of his starts, and the guy is just an in-zone swing-and-miss merchant. Like, if you want to talk about what Breslow likes, Garrett Crochet is the king of the in-zone swing-and-miss, best in baseball, at least not counting relievers. Jared Jones, I believe, was like, he was definitely top 10 in that category last year. So he's definitely the guy that, and again, he was a rookie too, so obviously he's going to get better. That said, the Red Sox just traded four of their top 15 prospects for Garrett Crochet. Now, if you're going to trade one of your best young players and one of your top three prospects, like, you're really draining yourself here, and you haven't even spent a dime yet. I love Jared Jones. I'd be incredibly excited to watch him, and it would basically mean that you don't have to touch your starting rotation if you don't want to for years, and it would certainly help in that regard. I just think that there are easier ways to get good quality pitching, not to mention pitchers that have a history of eating more innings. Not that Jones has had the opportunity to do it yet, but one thing this rotation doesn't have is a guy who's eaten 175 plus innings multiple times, 180 to 200 innings multiple times, has made 30 starts multiple times. The only guy they have that's done that is Giolito. But when you're coming off Tommy John, I don't know if you can count on those things. You're going to have him, I don't want to say on training wheels, but you are going to have to be a little careful with him. So that's the one thing that holds me up with Jones. But again, like, absolute stud of a pitcher. My hesitancy is nothing against the guy himself. If there was a guy to go all in for, it's him. But you got to understand that it is going to cost a lot more than Crochet, because he's got 5 years compared to two. Pat, what do you think of Jones?
So I love Jared Jones. I think he is the perfect age to kind of develop with this young team. Gordo, one thing I wouldn't even call it pushback. It's just more of a point out. They gave up Teal and they gave up Montgomery, obviously. They gave up two top 100 prospects. So as of right now, as it stands today, their top 100 prospects are Roman, Christian Campbell, and Marcelo, right? And Franklin Arias. If you look at the updated Sox prospect rankings, in between, like, 1 through 7, Anthony, Campbell, Meyer, Perales, Arias, Blaze, Cespedes, all of those guys in the last calendar year, maybe year and a half, have all been top 100 guys. Sure, they thinned it out. They are still so insanely deep in the farm system that I don't even think trading Meyer and Willier hamstrings the farm whatsoever.
I wouldn't say it hamstrings it, but it takes a serious strength. And it's like, after, if you trade Meyer, then once Roman and Campbell come up, really, what's coming up next anytime soon? A lot of those guys that you've listed are single A players right
now.
The
World Series.
But on the counterpoint of that, when is the next time the Sox need guys to come up and fill holes? Casas is on controlled rookie deal. Duran, we'll say Abreu gets traded. Rafael is locked up. Story has some years left. Let's say they sign.
I get it, but the thing is, things change so often. Guys get hurt. Guys take steps back. I'll give you an example. Like, Jaren Duran is he's a super two guy, so he's going to have 4 years of arbitration here, meaning by the end of his arbitration process, he's going to be expensive. If he has remember Cody Bellinger, they non-tendered Cody, the Dodgers non-tendered him because he was about to make like $20 million arbitration coming off a crap year. Like, that's an example of something that could change. Like, Jaren Duran is great, and then, oh, by the end, actually, he posts a 650 OPS season and is down into the 50th percentile and outs above average, and he has to get non-tendered, and that just uproots your whole plans. Like, guys get hurt. Everything changes. You need to have – this is why they always talk about this constant flow, and if you take too big of a chunk out of it and you have a year or two gap between guys coming up, not only does it hurt you at future trade deadlines when you need things – it hurts you with guys coming up through the system, guys that could turn into staples on your team. You need that constant flow. They finally have it. I don't want them to get rid of it. You can subtract from it, but I don't want them to get rid of it.
But Gordo, aren't you also adding to it if you add a 22-year-old who you think could be an ace? He's the same age as all these prospects. He's actually probably younger than a lot of the prospects. I know he's got, you know, 1 year of service time now, but I don't know. I feel like you're looking at it as a subtraction. But it's only a subtraction in terms of how many players you're losing. Willier Abreu is going to get pushed out anyway. Roman Anthony is number one prospect in baseball. He's going to be in there. So it's really just Meyer as like the big loss to the system. And I feel like that's not that crazy. And on top of that, you're spending no cash on Jared Jones. So you'd have a ton of money to blow the following year. I just feel like it still leaves the Red Sox with a ton of flexibility.
I agree. The Red Sox would still have plenty of flexibility. I think that there's so much to benefit from having that strength and just to turn it into like a pretty average farm system. And obviously once Roman and Campbell graduate, it would be a pretty below average system right off the bat. I shouldn't say it would be like a little bit below average, I think, once those two graduate, if Meyer was gone.
But which good teams have like great farm systems? Who's a team Dodgers. Right now? Do the Dodgers have a great farm right now? They have an okay farm. It's okay.
I think it's top five again. I know it took like a brief step back, but they jumped right back. Cubs, I know. I mean, Cubs didn't make the playoffs.
Who Cubs else are kind of like farm? The Red Sox. They're like the Red Sox a year behind. Like, they have a really good farm. They're about to be contenders, but I feel like they're like 1 year behind. Yeah, the Dodgers system's okay. They don't have nobody in the top 10, nobody in the top 20. Their best prospect is ranked 39th, and he's a catcher who's probably not going to be a
catcher. They're a deep system, too. Like, it's not just the top 100 guys. Like, they go beyond that. But, Sammy, sure, I want to move forward. I want to get your B op. Give me your B option, and then I want to move to Pat's top pitching option.
Okay, option B is much simpler. And, Gordo, I think you'll like this much more. Sign Walker Buehler to a pillow contract, either a one-year deal or a one-year deal with some sort of option after it. He's going to be middle market money in terms of starting pitchers, I'm sure, because he hasn't pitched well lately, but he has a great he's had a great career, and he looked good in October. And this way, if you get him, you get a lot of upside from him. If he pitches like his old self, fantastic. If he doesn't, you have Richard Fitz, Quinn Priester, Cooper Criswell, and the trade deadline that you can use to fix that. So Walker Buehler is the much simpler, probably safer option than Jared Jones.
What I would do if they got Buehler, and I do like the idea, is I would roll into camp with six starters, and I'd be open to if Cutter, I know he had a really good year, made 30 starts. If everyone's healthy, I'm open to having him open the season as a long reliever, and you can kind of shuffle guys in and out, give guys time off. Like, I'm not sure how
Cutter,
much I love
long reliever.
Yeah, like sort of. It's sort of like you would start him. So it's like kind of like a time off, or you could fake IL guys if you want. But I'm just saying you only go five at a time, shuffle guys in and out of the rotation. That gets them rest, keeps them fresh for the end of the season.
Yeah,
I like it. I like it if you're adding to the depth, because like if you look at his numbers from last year, if you add Buehler, subtract Crawford, you're getting worse unless he bounces back in a big way. I like it if it's you have six legitimate big league options. And if all are healthy, you figure it out from there. That's where I go with Buehler.
Well, I definitely encourage people to tune into our next episode where I discuss what would happen if Cutter Crawford got pushed out of the rotation. It's a trade scenario. So,
ooh, next episode dropping on Friday. Pat, yes. Quick, what do you think of Buehler? And then I want to hear your top dog.
My top option actually is Buehler as well.
Oh, I think, give me your pitch.
Yeah. I think one plus one pillow contract. I think honestly, pretty similar to what Giolito just got, like a one plus one, 20 each year, or first year with a $22 million option, something along the lines. I think it's safe, because I have very serious doubts that they pay Corbin Burns at his age 30, you know, right now. I think Buehler has more than enough of a track record there to actually buy into a breakout. You're not getting yourself into, you know, a James Paxton territory where there's a bunch of injuries, track record's not great. Walker Buehler's track record is phenomenal. He just had another Tommy John. Like, there's plenty to bounce back from there. And then not to mention that, if he is really good, he does opt out. Gordon, you already mentioned it. Next year's pitching market is absolutely loaded.
And you get a pick.
Exactly. You QO him, you get a pick for him. You're right back in the market with the Ceases, the Frambers, the Gallons, those guys in the world. And you're right back in the thick of it. It's safe. It's smart. There's plenty of upside. And I honestly, his downside, he had a really, really bad year this year. I would be appalled if he reproduced how bad of a year he just had.
The thing with Buehler too, it's a move you make if you believe in your pitching infrastructure. Because what a team like the Mets does, what they did this year is they believed in their infrastructure. It worked. They had all these QO guys, so all these picks to work with. It doesn't even hurt them to sign a Juan Soto. They can go out and sign another one if they want and still be net positive a pick. It's weird. The QO system, it's meant to benefit the small market teams that can't keep their players, but really what it does is benefit the big market teams that sign these one-year pitchers, and they just get even more picks.
How do you not see that? Like, how did the...
Yeah.
The qualifying offer blows my mind. It's so dumb. I don't know who put that together and was like, yeah, this will work.
And they did it again. Like, they were going to get rid of it, and then they decided not to because they wanted it to benefit the... I mean, I guess it does suppress contracts.
Dude, but there's nothing I care about more than protecting the money of the rich owners. I will die for that cause.
But yeah, Buehler, we talked about it in the beginning of the offseason a lot, where we were kind of up and down on the idea. And it's the same thing, I'll say it with Nick Pivetta too, because there was that report from Tom Caron that the Red Sox still really like him. It was the same thing with Buehler, same thing with Pivetta, a lot of these guys. I like them, but don't want them to be the best pitcher the Red Sox add.
Can we talk about Pivetta really quick? Really quick, yeah. Pivetta. Just hypothetically, who would you rather? Cutter Crawford on a rookie deal, or Pivetta making like $18, $19 million a year for however many years? I feel like this is the easiest question of all time.
Well, I would take Cutter, but again, if they re-sign Pivetta, I would want it to be they go in with six guys as potential starters.
The only reason I'm against the six-man rotation, well, two reasons.
I'm not saying for a six-man rotation.
So what are you saying, six starters?
I'm saying six starters, and you have one guy on the IL at a time, one guy in the bullpen at a time, getting rest. Like, you have to find ways to build rest into these guys' seasons, because you saw it last year. These guys got burned out by June, July, because they had to start every fifth day because they couldn't build in rest because they had no depth.
I feel like that's a poor use of assets, though. I feel like you're better off moving one of those guys, rebuilding the farm, or adding to the major league team, because you already have in AAA Criswell, Fitz, Priester. You have depth now, finally, and it's like a foreign feeling to us as Red Sox fans, because we're used to some schmuck who's 36 years old with an 8 ERA who's like, okay, here I come. I'll salvage this game for you, Red Sox.
But those guys are good, but it's not like with the Dodgers, they have these like prime pitching prospects, and it's like someone gets hurt. Okay, well, bring in Gavin Stone. Like,
you can't compare yourself to the Dodgers, though.
That's what they do. They go into seasons with 7, 8, 9, 10 big league starters. Like,
right?
Why should we hold ourselves to 5?
Even so, they had to bullpen game in the World Series. How nuts is that? Well, also,
guess what? They wouldn't have been there if they'd only had 5 pitchers. If they only had 5 big league starters, guess who's not in the World Series? The Dodgers. Oh, yeah.
But I'm saying the Red Sox already have more than 5. So that's why I wouldn't want to take one of the major league guys. Like, I was talking to someone today, Cutter Crawford. I would argue his best trait is that he gave the Red Sox a ton of innings in 2024. If you put him in the bullpen, it just crushes his value. And I don't know. I feel like you're better off leaving those extra starter spots to those young guys in AAA, or even signing an up and down veteran. Not a guy like Cutter who's not a rising star, but a guy who's growing and keeps getting better. That's a guy I feel like I'd either keep him in the rotation or move him somewhere else for a big piece. Or not a big piece, a piece.
I'm a little bit more open to having just 5 if you have a little bit more of a veteran presence. Sure, bet. I'll give you my guy. He is that. But what I will say is, just think about what it's been like watching the Red Sox for the last couple of seasons. How often have they had their 5 starting pitchers that they intended to enter the season with all healthy at the same time? It's not often.
Oh, never. Never.
So that's why going in with 6 is really not... Like, it is a good use of assets, because then you're always going to have 5 legitimate average or above average starters in your rotation at a time. We've had like 30 to 50 starts per year with these like Cooper Criswell types. And it's like, yeah, he actually pitched pretty well as a starter last year.
You know what? I feel like that's something you do towards the end of the season. Just doing that for a whole year just seems so... That's so odd.
But you need it at the beginning. Guys get delayed in spring training. It's most important.
Go to the young guys. That's the perfect time to go to the young guys right there. Wouldn't you want?
They'll still get time. He will. He'll still.
Come on.
How many times we started like, shit, what was his, what's that guy's name who used to pitch for the Royals? And Brad Keller. How many times we had like Brad Keller and Josh Winkowski starting games last year? Like,
well, I mean, we didn't have Richard Fitz ready to go, Quinn Priester and Cooper Criswell in AAA last year. I just don't like the concept of reducing Cutter's innings for any reason. It's just like, that's his best trait. Why get rid of it? I don't know.
I'm not saying purposely reduce his innings. I'm just saying make it so that you can always have a legitimate big league starter, above average guy, proven on the mound as often as possible. Have 10 or fewer starts in the bigs from guys like Priester, Fitz. Like, obviously, we like those guys. We think they could be okay. But those guys are not Brian Baio, Tanner Houck, Cutter Crawford. Well, anyway, we're running pretty low on time. I got to give my pitching target A before we get out of here. It's Luis Castillo. I love Luis Castillo. This is a guy who every single start last year besides one reached 5 innings. The only time he didn't was his final start of the season when they pulled him at 56 pitches. He allowed 3 earned runs or fewer in 22 of his final 27 starts of the season. A notorious slow starter, but once he gets going, like after the first 3 or so starts of the year, you can count on a good start, a guy who's going to keep you in the game every single time. And you get a top of the line type guy, a guy who's been that for years. I know he took a slight step back last year, but it was still like a 3.6 ERA. I know the home road splits aren't great, but they're not great for really any of the Mariners pitchers. I can't really explain why that is, because they're all great pitchers. But this is a guy who's going to keep you in every single game. You can get a front of the rotation type pitcher, and you only commit 3 years to him. And because he's making so much money, I truly believe the Mariners aren't going to be able to get a lot for him, especially if they're trying to clear that money and clear it fast to sign a guy like maybe Christian Walker. People float that like maybe Tristan Casas or Cutter Crawford in a deal over there. I don't think it's going to cost that. I think you should be able to get Luis Castillo value-wise for maybe like David Hamilton and another lower tier prospect, like lower level, not lower tier, but like
Alan Castro.
Alan Castro, great example. David Hamilton and Alan Castro maybe something else, but very small. From a value-wise standpoint, if they're taking on the entire Luis Castillo contract, should be able to get that done. You get him under contract for 3 years. There's minimal risk there. It is a lot less risky than investing 4 or 5 years. Like, I love Jack Flaherty. I would go nuts for him on a 3 or 4 year deal. If it's a 5 year deal, that comes with so much more risk than getting a guy like Castillo on a 3 year deal. The one thing that I said it earlier in the episode, the one thing that this Red Sox rotation lacks is a guy that you know for a fact is going to throw 30 starts. I know they like to hype up the 30 start guys, but you don't. They've done it once each. This is a guy who basically does it every single year. 175 innings basically every year. We think Giolito can do it, but he's coming off Tommy John. This is a guy who you can insert in the rotation when you're building up a guy like Garrett Crochet, when you're continuing to build up guys like Bayo and Hauk and maybe Cutter. We'll see if he's in the rotation, if they got a Castillo. That's a guy who could be your safety net there. I think he'd be a great option. But really, any of those options, I think, are reasonable second-tier options because they've already gotten Crochet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like Castillo. I mean, it's great that his price would be low. We know who he is. He's fairly consistent. He is trending down slowly if you look at the velocity and everything, and the splits aren't great. But he's still a very good pitcher. Me, personally, I'm still kind of in get-your-guy mode. I think it's the right time for the Red Sox to operate that way. But I don't think anyone's going to be complaining if the Red Sox got Luis Castillo for friggin' David Hamilton and Alan Castro, something like that. And I also would say he doesn't make that much money for a guy of his caliber. It's one of those contracts that has aged pretty well. Not for the Seattle Mariners, because no contract ages well for them. But for the Red Sox, what's he make, $25 million a year? That's not crazy. That's like a number three starter nowadays. So, not Luis Castillo, not my top choice. Would not complain one bit if that's the guy.
The truth is, the fact that the Red Sox are even talking about adding starting pitching right now in this state when they have five legitimate big league starters, it shows that they're serious, and I think that's a good thing. But we got to wrap here. Any quick enough said, Sammy? I know you had the Burns question prepped. I literally just have like a sentence. If anyone else has anything before I go.
Okay, quickly, I think Roky Sasaki to the White Sox is like a weirdly kind of decent fit. They have an insane farm system. He's the same age as all those guys, and they've like historically been okay at developing pitchers. So everyone's laughing at that. The White Sox are doing a presentation of Roky. Small market team. It's not West Coast, but I don't think it's that crazy. I could actually see that happening. I'm not going to bet on that happening. I think he goes to the Padres for some reason.
That's where I'm at, too.
Yu Darvish connection. But, like, the White Sox are not the worst option ever for him. Really strong farm system. A lot of pitchers in it, too. Sammy, and two catchers. Just saying.
Sammy, if he goes to the White Sox, I will never call you old again. Ever.
I think they have an outside chance. That's all I'm saying.
Pat, anything? That's good. All right. My thing is, I just think the Yankees got an absolute steal. Cody Bellinger gave nothing up. 2 year commitment or 1 year if he plays well and he opts out. Like, good for them. Like, they continue to just go bananas since getting dumped by Soto. But yeah, Sox got to make moves, keep catching up. Hopefully, the Orioles think their rotation is okay. That's where I'll leave it. Appreciate everyone tuning in to this edition of Play Tessie. We'll be back in your ears Friday with a special Who Says No edition of PT. But before we wrap it up, before you go about your day, remember, subscribe so you can get that notification when our next episode drops. Subscribe, rate 5 stars wherever you're getting your podcasts. Check us out on YouTube on the WEI channel. You can find the Play Tessie playlist there. Has all of our episodes. Hit the thumbs up button there. Subscribe to WEI. Find us on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. For Sammy and for Pat and for Joe producing, it's Gordo here. For Play Tessie, episode 162. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.